I'm Chip Essenflo.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. You know, it's summertime. The living is easy. Time for a road trip, Chip. Let's go.
It sounds like Mr. Steve is already on the road.
I think I might be on the road by the time Tuesday rolls around. We'll see. We'll see what happens. We'll see how this works. It's travel in the time of COVID. We'll see how any of this works out for us.
Film at 11.
To our film at 11, our movie of the week. You have been watching stuff on TV and through your streaming services, and I don't know what I've been doing the last week, Chip, but you got a chance to see The Secrets of Blackmore, The True History of Dungeons & Dragons. This is a documentary all about those guys that made Dungeons & Dragons happen.
Now, this is streaming right now on Amazon Prime. And, Steve, we read a book about Gary Gygax and the development of Dungeons & Dragons a few years ago. We've been up to Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, to GaryCon, interviewed a whole bunch of the people who were involved in setting up this game that really has become sort of an institution and certainly playing out in, you know, a Netflix series. So we're thinking of Stranger Things, you know, that uses a lot of Dungeons and Dragons imagery. Well, guess what, Steve? This exploration goes back even further, and it goes back to Minneapolis and the Twin Cities, where another group of people who basically inspired part of Dungeons and Dragons, what would become Dungeons and Dragons. And this is about their story.
A group before Gary Gygax? Oh, boy. I don't know if they're going to let you back into GaryCon next year.
Well, David Emerson shows up at the GaryCon. He, along with Gary Gygax, wrote the first manual that ended up being part of this. So they are very aware of this group. And along with another gentleman who I was not aware of, David Wesley, he also was part of basically setting up what modern role-playing games would be. If you're not familiar with what a role-playing game is, it's not a board game like traditional, where you have a beginning, a middle, and an end. This is sort of like an open novel where you're going on a journey together, you're going on a mission together, there's chance involved, everybody could die, everybody could live, everybody could win, everyone could lose. And in fact, one of the ways we can distinguish it, people may refer to an event that happened in one of the games played long ago like it's a history event. Do you remember when we did the SYG pass or whatever it was? Many of these games were not fantasy role games. So this is actually before fantasy roles. Many of them were war games. And I learned a little bit at the University of Minnesota Library, there was a book called Strategos, The American Game of War, that had a huge influence on how these role-playing games worked. And the way one of the gentlemen created the community was he went to the university library, pulled this book, and saw everyone who checked out this book. So in the old days, in the back of a book or in the front of the book, they would have a card, and it would say, Steve Fodor checked out this book, you know, a month ago, and then John Smith did it 3 months ago. Well, he took all those names and contacted them all. And anyway, they ended up creating a situation where they all got together and they practiced on how to play these games. They developed these games. There was a little bit of history on, I guess, how games sometimes that they thought were failures were absolutely working. And they're not all Dungeons & Dragons games. They are role-playing games, and there's games of chance. We've mentioned the game Diplomacy that was developed in the Chicago area by a friend of mine's father. And this game had an impact on how we look at those games. It truly is. I'm so glad that filmmakers are choosing, you know, this is the time to start documenting that information before, you know, these people get older and maybe they go away and we lose these stories. So I recommend this to any person who has an interest in how, you know, basically games get started.
And role-playing games are so much about storytelling. There's usually a central figure who is telling the story, and all of the players then get to be a part of, an interactive part of that story. This can be so much fun. It can create so much community amongst that group of people who are playing those games together, getting to know each other. This is one of the things that The Incomparable does so well. They have a podcast called Total Party Kill, where, yes, a group of people get together and play role-playing games together in a podcast format. And they're so much fun. They're so fun to get into that storytelling aspect. I like this idea.
This is on Amazon Prime. It's streaming right now as part of your Prime membership.
Nice. You also got to see another documentary. This is The Uncomfortable Truth. This is also on Amazon Prime.
This is incredibly timely. This is the story of Loki Mulholland. Loki wanted to learn a little bit about race relations and a little bit about the history of it in the United States. And what he learned by going back through his ancestry was that he has a relative that was part of Jamestown settlement. So all the way back to, you know, before the United States, the founding of what would become the United States, a little bit of the rise of the institutional slavery, and ultimately, when slavery was outlawed, the institutional racism that still permeates society today, and a little bit of the history of how that came to be. How, after we fought a civil war, how after the civil rights movement, why are we still having challenges with that today? And through his exploration of his own family history, along with a number of people who are there to provide insights, we get an idea of what the challenges we are facing. It's not necessarily giving solutions, but once you can identify that there is a group of Americans, Black Americans in particular, Black males, and, you know, even a subset of that, who are having incredible challenges trying to live this American dream, then we recognize that there may be some things that we need to do.
And some solutions to this institutional racism.
I don't know if there are solutions given, but I do know that there you can certainly identify them there.
Okay, so back to what you said a moment ago, finding the problem might lead to a solution. So this is uncomfortable, and we are certainly living in a moment where we are identifying problems in America, and hopefully we will be able to solve some of these issues.
And it's incredibly timely for right now, because we've had riots, we've had protests, we've had unfortunate events happen where you know, people were killed by those, you know, who are supposed to be protecting us, and we're finding technology that's exposing this type of, once again, institutional racism. And then if you can identify it, then maybe you can find the right questions to ask to be able to find the right solutions. So this is an incredibly deep exploration. It's not perfect, I will say that, but this is very, very good, and the messaging is very tight.
And good timing on catching this one on Amazon Prime, Chip. You also watched Raging Bull, the classic boxing movie. Jake LaMotta, the story of this guy who found a way.
Yeah, have you ever watched this, Steve?
I have never watched Raging Bull. Boxing is not a thing that I enjoy, and I don't like boxing movies. I did watch Rocky a few weeks back. Remember that? Yeah, that's as far as I'm going to get, I think.
So Raging Bull is a celebrated film, and boxing is part of this film. It's a backdrop. I was really surprised that the boxing scenes in it were very choreographed and sort of a dancing situation. Rocky, especially even the later Rockies, as they started getting more and more cartoonish, the boxing scenes were so much more powerful. But Scorsese, who was our director on this, certainly has a flair for putting together this film. This film, they chose black and white. It stars Robert De Niro and Joe Pesci. There's a violence to this. And I'm not talking about in the ring. In fact, there's Jake LaMotta is a gentleman who is not particularly trusting of those around him, especially his. There's two events he ends up having with his one wife and then another wife that certainly define his relationship to women. The second one, he actually punches her, knocks her out flat on. And one of the crazy scenes is she comes back. She's packing up her clothing to leave him. And he convinces her to stay. This is the rise of his boxing career. And then we have the after of the boxing career where he starts putting on weight, starts running a club. And, you know, it's just all the challenges you would have. I'm glad I watched this. It is a product of its time. I would say this movie is maybe a 70 out of 100. You know, somewhere around that. I'm glad I watched it. I don't know if I need to re-experience it.
Okay. You saw The Manchurian Candidate, the 1962 version, talking about brainwashing and international communist conspiracies, this one.
This is an interesting film. I had not watched this one either. This is the 1962 version of it. Frank Sinatra is in this film, and Janet Leigh. So you got that going for you. And there was a really interesting scene at the beginning of the Cold War. We're not at the height yet, but, you know, communists infiltrating society and then brainwashing, forcing us to do things against our will. It's a story of a troop that gets captured by an Asian communist group. They are brainwashed, and then they're sent back to the United States where they go through all sorts of challenges between post-traumatic stress disorder, feeling uneasy, and ultimately an attempted assassination. And then we're also dealing with people in the United States who also could be part of this communist conspiracy also. It certainly is a product of its time. It was a very interesting story. I can see why they remade this film. I'm glad I watched it. Once again, it's a black and white film from 1962. I'll give this film maybe a 65 out of 100.
Okay. And then to complete your trifecta of black and white amazing films from the past, you saw 12 Angry Men from 1957.
Yeah, I saw this as one of the 99-cent rentals on Apple. So I picked it up, and I said, oh, yeah, I'll watch it at some point. So one evening, I put it on. And as you watch this, you just realize you are looking at a masterpiece in cinema, a masterpiece in playwriting, and certainly a way of addressing prejudice, a way of addressing how we see society, and how our biases basically lead us into conversations, and how we just need to be ultra aware of those. There is a wonderful scene in this where our bigot stands up and says those people, and just starts going after why this guy is guilty and how it's guilty and all this other part. And what are the responses of the other 11 men? Well, it's a beautiful scene. They all get up one by one. They leave him, and they leave this guy just spewing his hatred for this person who is being tried and charged with murder, and they just leave him by himself. Every scene is just, it's an amazing expose on how we should be willing to listen and to really challenge our beliefs at times. And
brilliant dialogue. The writing on 12 Angry Men is so gripping. You wouldn't think that it should be. There's just 12 men in a room. It is a play that was filmed, essentially. And just the way that those words intermingle with each other, this is a masterpiece. I love that word for this.
And if you're not familiar with this and you've never watched it, I would encourage it. I'll give this. This is 100. This is probably as good as cinema gets. And ultimately, what you realize is that one man standing up and saying, hey, listen, I don't have all the answers, but I'm not willing to take that leap to guilty without being convinced. And that's what, you know, the American society, being judged by your peers, is supposed to be. This man was charged with murder. And if they're convicted, the sentence is dire. And over the course of the play, we start moving everyone to the point where everyone eventually lets this person go because there was a reasonable doubt. And if you ever wanted to know how things should be judged, this is a good exercise showing how this should work.
Yep. Excellent. Wonderful. Yes, I agree with you. This is nearly a perfect, 100 on the chip scale. I absolutely agree with that.
Now, Steve, I'm not the only person that's been watching things. What have you been watching, big boy?
Very little, but I did get a chance to see Central Park on Apple TV Plus. This is the new animated musical series from Lauren Bochard, the creator of Bob's Burgers. Again, Bob's Burgers is huge in my house. We watch Bob's Burgers almost every day of the coronavirus so far. And so we were excited for a new series from this mind. And Apple TV has been really good at finding these names, throwing money at creators, directors, actors to get this material that they need to launch this new service.
Is Bob's Burgers a musical?
Bob's Burgers features a lot of music. There is I believe it was a 3-CD set of the music from the first few seasons of Bob's Burgers.
Does this play out like a traditional musical then? Central Park?
Central Park is a traditional musical. Yes, it opens with a song. There is a narrator who is played by Josh Gad who explains all of the things that are happening in the scene. And then the characters sing and dance about their situation that are happening during the course of this fun. It is a musical, which might put a lot of people off because they don't like that format. My 14-year-old who really loves Bob's Burgers and everything that comes with it, he really didn't get hooked by Central Park. This is yet another Apple TV Plus show that should be great, should be the hook that gets people interested, and it just falls flat because of some small piece of the puzzle.
Okay.
There are going to be a total of 13 episodes. The first three have been released, and they're going to release the other 10 weekly through June, July, and into August. So I look forward to seeing what comes of the rest of that season.
And you can check that out on Apple TV Plus.
Mm-hmm. Let's see what Stacey saw this week.
Hi, everyone. So we're at the point of lockdown over here where I've pretty much run out of films to watch. And I've been trawling the streaming sites hoping to find a low-budget gem somewhere hidden away. I wouldn't say this was entirely a gem, so let's just preface this as weirdly interesting. Should you be looking for a film that you've definitely not seen before, Zombiesaurus, also known as The Jurassic Dead. I've watched a lot of films, as you all know, and I can safely say I've never seen anything quite like this before. When a mad scientist decides to take over America with a combination of EMPs, toxic zombification gas, and dinosaurs brought back from the dead, it's up to a small band of video game style militia and some hapless teenagers to stop the beginning of the end as we know it. And yes, I know exactly how insane all of that sounds. I never thought I'd be saying the words toxic zombification gas. Thankfully, this film has its tongue firmly in its cheek. It knows it's a B-movie and it's gloriously loving it. It allows you to enjoy the giggles and the overtop story as much as they do. It's somewhat satirical in places, especially the end, but mostly just manically funny. Zombiesaurus provides laughs, gasps, and a what-the-hell moment every now and then that make it oddly compelling to keep watching, as well as some surprisingly on-the-nose pieces about the world we live in the closing moments of the film. As I said, there is some satire there. It really hits the nail on the head. The cast work really well, with the best acting chops coming from surprising places. Professional bodybuilder Andy Hammond is perfect as the cocky yet kind Duke Nukem ripoff, Duke. Yes, that is really the character's name, Duke. And within the militia's ranks, there are also some talented martial artists who are actors in this piece, so the action pieces don't come across as being completely unbelievable, aside from a certain punch of a certain creature that absolutely killed me watching this film. I'm not going to tell you what it was. You need to experience that moment for yourself, but my God, it was funny. Ending in a darker yet funnier place than I expected, Zombiesaurus is a surprisingly enjoyable watch. Low budget for sure, with a storyline that's extreme in its silliness. It works far better than you'd ever think it could. Left on a cliffhanger of sorts, I'd be very happy to watch a sequel following what happened next, which I think is high praise for it. If you want something strange to watch, this might just be the choice for you. If you watch this and you like it, you might also like Triassic World, which has scientists experimenting again, but this time to farm human organs, and this goes exactly as well as you think it would. Think Deep Blue Sea premise, but schlocky and dinosaur-filled. Or there's Raptor Ranch, which is completely nonsensical. Who would breed dinosaurs for underground fights on a farm? Did they not see Jurassic Park? This was never going to end well for them. But it's very watchable with or without a beer. And that's all from me for this time. If you want to hear more of my ramblings on films and whatnot, or chat to me about horror, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Films with Stacey, where you can also find links to my website to read more. Until next time, happy viewing.
Opening, or more likely streaming this week, we've got some of the movies that should have come to theaters, but the companies that put out movies have decided a lot of these titles are just going to come straight to streaming. The first one is Greyhound. This is a World War II movie written by and starring Tom Hanks.
Now, Tom Hanks certainly has been able to be part of many memorable films over the last, 10, 15 years. Greyhound is about a submarine and about their mission, and also the Nazi U-boats, who basically are hunting them down. This looks incredibly good. And this was supposed to be a full theatrical release. Unfortunately, with COVID-19, but fortunately for us, they've chosen to release it through a streaming service, Apple TV Plus.
Mm-hmm. We'll see how that works out, because again, I have very high expectations for this. This looks like it's going to be something special. I hope that it's as good as the trailer. You should really click on the trailer for this, because yeah, I think this one might be a real spark.
So on Netflix, we have Five Bloods, which is which is a Spike Lee joint, and this looks fantastic too.
Yeah, four African-American Vietnam vets battle the forces of man and nature when they return to Vietnam to find what they left, a big box of gold. This looks really good. I saw this one on a commercial right before the show started, as a matter of fact, and I was like, wow, that looks really good. And it's directed by Spike Lee, which I have high expectations for him. There is a sixth season of Patriot Act with Hasan Minhaj coming to Netflix this week.
How did this slip by me? This looks excellent.
I don't know. You and I both have never seen any of the episodes of Patriot Act on Netflix. But yes, this absolutely looks like the right show for today. Hasan Minhaj, you might know as a correspondent from The Daily Show. He's using his comedic voice and storytelling to explore some of those bigger stories in the world right now with a huge comic bent toward them. I look forward to going back and starting with season one of Patriot Act. This is the sixth season, but the first season only aired in October of 2018. So we're only about a year and a half behind, Chip.
So Disney Plus has also released a new film this week.
Yep, Artemis Fowl, the movie version of the young adult book of the same title. This is not Harry Potter. This is a story of a young child who learns that he's got special skills, but instead of being a wizard, Harry, Artemis is more of a spy sort of story with fairies and trolls in tow.
And once again, this was going to be a theatrical release, but when the COVID-19 started, Disney decided to go ahead and place it on their streaming services. Steve, Hulu's got a Robot Chicken-inspired story for us.
Yeah, this one's called Crossing Swords. It is another one of those animated series that has so many inappropriate jokes in it that are so cringy for me. I'm sure my teenage boys will love it.
Well, it looks like something like imagine the Lego movie with, say, some naughty words into it.
Lots of situations that the Lego movie would not go into. Yes. Those of you familiar with Robot Chicken, it's very similar to that, only the toys are different shapes.
Hulu's got another show for us.
Yep, the next episode of Into the Dark is coming out this week. It is called Good Boy. Into the Dark is a horror anthology series, and every episode is inspired by a holiday. This week, it's Pet Appreciation Week. So they released a horror movie about a dog who will take away all your troubles by killing your ex-boyfriends. Thanks, Hulu.
The playful pet all of a sudden becomes your accomplice. All right, Steve, 30 for 30 has been known to give us a lot of wonderful films. It streams on ESPN. What are we going to watch this week?
Yeah, that's a great documentary series telling some of the great stories of sports history. The subject of this week's sports history, it's called Long Gone Summer. It's the story of Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa's 1998 home run chase, something that here in Chicago we certainly were paying close attention to 22 years ago. Wow.
Sammy Sosa played for a certain team, probably Chicago's baseball team, right, Steve?
Yes, he did play for Chicago's baseball team, and they'll win next year. Don't worry. Next year.
All right, that's not the only Chicago-inspired sports documentary coming out this week.
Yep, Showtime has a boxing documentary called Ringside. This follows two young boxers and their aspirations surviving on the dangerous south side of Chicago to achieve boxing glory.
So Steve, that's going to give you an opportunity to use your southern accent.
Right, I can use my south side of Chicago accent, and we can trade southern accents, you and I.
Does Pete Davidson stretch out on any roles in the movie this week?
Stretch out. Pete Davidson, stretch out. Yeah, he plays a guy who lives in his mom's basement and smokes weed. Huh. Hey, it's Pete Davidson, everybody. This is called The King of Staten Island.
Now, this looks kind of fun. Now, let's be honest. Steve threatens not to leave home from his mom. And his mom looks at him like all moms would look at their sons who are not going to leave the home. And eventually it looks like maybe he did and becomes a firefighter. So this looks like a fun, light comedy with a lot of, Pete Davidson humor.
How did this come on me? How did this become about me all of a sudden? This is very much just Pete Davidson.
Steve, is there maybe an uncomfortable movie that looks kind of interesting and possibly pretty good, but may not be good?
Yes, the movie that Chip put on the list this week is called Mope. It is the tragic true story of best friends who try to become porn actors and wind up in infamy because of a murder that happens in this storyline.
A murder with ninja weapons, Steve.
Samurai, sir. Samurai weapons. Big difference.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Steve Driver and Tom Dong. And there is some absurd scene that we've got linked in here that if you want to watch it, you can look at it. David Arquette is involved in it. This was released in Canada, so you can blame the Canadians for this one, back in 2019. And now, you know, the Americans get the pleasure of watching this today.
Yes, that's what it is.
Book it. Book it.
Brings us to our book it, our book of the week. You keep reading these great books about society and about how to make things better. This week you have a book for us called How Innovation Works and Why It Flourishes in Freedom. This is written by Matt Ridley.
So Matt Ridley is a friend of mine who I met on Facebook. And he is an economist and a writer, and he is certainly an incredibly interesting guy. His book came out, and I said, I'll read that. And he was like, thank you. And here I am. So this book was just released May 19th of 2020. It's a brand new book. And basically, it's a study on innovation, what it means to the world, how it kind of developed over the past, and the challenges of trying to either spark innovation in the sense of forcing it on society, or how to even model it. How does it even come around? And our concern always is, if our society is not receiving enough innovation. So there's a tremendous amount of topics that get discussed. So we're going to talk a little bit about energy. We're going to talk about public health. We're going to talk about transportation, food, low technology innovations, communication and computing, prehistoric innovation, innovation essentials, and then basically the economics of innovation. So these are all different divisions of this book that we are going to kind of study a little bit about how those areas and the innovations happen. What we learned ultimately is that people who have interest in subjects share their information. My goodness, do we know anything that's really good at sharing information right now? I would say the internet.
That is the innovation that has sparked so many further innovations for certain.
And you know, if you have interest in a subject, this idea of being able to quickly find a group of people who have your interest in that subject is amazing. And so one of the stories we get in here is the story of airplane flight. And this idea of the United States government really wanted to have an airplane. They wanted something to fly. And so they got one of the best engineers. They gave that guy a lot of money to do it. And he had a big event in Washington, and it didn't work out very well. He fell right into the Potomac. But we got also was the story of Orville and Wilbur Wright. Up in Dayton, Ohio, they owned a bicycle shop. They shared ideas. They read ideas from other people who had interest in this. And they ran a bicycle shop during the summer. And during the wintertime, they headed off to Kitty Hawk, North Carolina, where they tested out their ideas. And they eventually got an airplane to fly, along with, you know, a number of other places and a number of other different countries. But even when that happened, nobody could believe that they did it. And so we get a little bit of the people challenging, you think you have an airplane that flies? Come to our area, bring your invention. And so even after something, you know, that ultimately changed how we use the world. Think about the world went from this flat 2D surface to immediately you've got a third dimension up there. It changed warfare forever. It changed our ability to go to space. I mean, we landed a person on the moon. And how we transport ourselves around the world up into pretty much the COVID-19 era.
Until COVID-19 grounded everybody. Great. But, road trip.
And think about what we have right now. We have the COVID-19, which is a huge challenge for us. Mm-hmm. Well, governments all over the world are throwing money at it. But we have a lot of people out there sharing ideas, thinking about how to do this. If you can find a solution to this, you could be a very wealthy person. You absolutely could. But, you know, how do you get that information to the public? And, you know, how do we get it to, you know, the everyday Joe? And hopefully we won't have to deal with this 20 years from now.
And finding those innovators, finding those people who have that spark, who have that idea to change something, they find a problem and they think of a solution. Steve Jobs was certainly one of those guys.
Sure, absolutely. And think about how he thought of innovation. Many of the products he brought to market, or he led the charge to bring to market, you didn't know you needed it. Mm-hmm. Until it happened.
Until he told you that you needed it. And he was right. We needed all that technology. And now we have it. And now that Steve Jobs is gone, where is the innovation? Is Apple innovating, or are they just iterating? Are they just making the next version of the same thing? What's the spark? That's the key to innovation.
Let's use Apple as our example for this. What would the smart watch, how is it going to impact healthcare going forward? I mean, think about what it could do. It's basically taking in your pulse. It's taking in an EKG at this point. Mm-hmm. It is certainly creating data. It watches you while you sleep. And you know, you can think of all these negative things that come to it, but the benefit is, what if we could tailor your healthcare around how your body naturally works? We all are human. We all have a natural part of this. And this is how innovators are thinking. How do we use something to our benefit? So innovation still remains a mystery to as far as the process is concerned, and it's really he suggests it's poorly understood by policymakers and business people, and we underappreciate what the human mind can create for us. Ultimately, it's not the matter of the one person working on their own. You know, it's about people working on ideas and then sharing them with others. And those ideas, you know, are shared among each other. That cross-pollination certainly is what makes things pretty special for us. And
yeah, community. I say the word community every day of my life. It is important that we work together, that we identify an issue, a problem, and then we think of a solution. That's the innovation. That's that spark.
Well, that's where you share your information. That doesn't mean you're working with a team. You could be working with a team, but in many times you could work on some micro part of it, and then share that to a group of people. And maybe other people have come up with a solution already. And what ultimately, as an economist, we've determined is we have a very difficult time modeling it. How do you put together a database of innovations and kind of forecast it out? Our concern is that if we create situations where we're unable to innovate, but the reality is how do you model what innovations will be coming? I think there's a use of futurist in this, but you're really kind of dreaming. We live in a Jetsons world, as some people say, but in other ways, the world that we dreamed up in the 1950s or the 1960s or any other time in the past is very different than the one we currently live in. So anyway, I love this book. I highly recommend it, especially to any person who has interest in entrepreneurship and the innovation that they pursue.
Very good. That is How Innovation Works and Why It Flourishes in Freedom by Matt Ridley.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our scroll with it. It is the week of June 14th, Chip. Do you know what that means?
Well, it's almost my grandfather's birthday.
Oh, well, that's great.
He was born on Flag Day.
Oh, it's a very important day. Flag Day is a day that I never forget, that's for sure. It is National Flag Week this week, and the observation of Flag Day is Sunday, June 14th.
It's a holiday in the sense that it is a celebration. Mm-hmm. But every year, the president has to make a proclamation for it. And I did not realize that. Because the president will issue a proclamation urging the people to observe the day as the anniversary of the adoption on June 14th, 1777, by the Continental Congress of the Stars and Stripes as the official flag of the United States of America. So the symbol that we use as a beacon of freedom and hope, well, guess what? It had a beginning.
It's Flag Day, the most important day of the year in my household for sure. It's my wedding anniversary.
Is it really?
Yes, sir.
You'll never forget it, Steve.
I will never forget Flag Day.
A day you'll never forget. You know what you probably should do is take a trip.
Yeah, I'll be on the road, so we will not be raising the flag. Hopefully, the people watching the house will be raising the flag for us on Flag Day, Sunday, June 14th. Happy anniversary, honey.
Steve, what should we do with all of our listeners? Should we tell them to join us daily?
Absolutely, every day of the week. So far, we are on episode 74 of the Pam Bedore and the Two Schmucks show. I mean, that's not what we're calling it. We're calling it Sandwiches at Irregular Hours. We are going through the entire canon of Sherlock Holmes mysteries from Arthur Conan Doyle. We just got started on a list of short stories called The Last Bow that was published in 1917. And they're the last of the short stories from Conan Doyle.
Well, until the next one is released, Dave, because there is a next one after that. At least at the time, they thought it was going to be The Last Bow. So far, this has been a wonderful collection of short stories. If you're not familiar with how the format works, we read a single short story or a chapter of one of the books every single day. You're welcome to read along with us. You're welcome to send us questions. You're welcome to draw pictures or anything like that. All you need to do is hashtag us at TMS Sherlock Holmes And we will be happy to read it as part of our program.
Yeah, it makes me so happy to see all the feedback from around the world that we're getting on what we're doing and how much fun we're having. We're having so much fun every morning with Pam talking about these wonderful mind teasers. This is a puzzle to get your mind off of your troubles every morning. Join us and go to our website, sandwichesatirregularhours.com, for all of those conversations in one convenient place. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
I think we can. If you need more information, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Spotify and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And you can always ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflow.
See you in the future. So we don't talk about what I want to talk about. What I want to thank you for. What I want to.